Where do the misfits go when they want to fit in? Cause I'm feeling alone. Where do the oddballs roll and the psychos swim? Cause I want to fit in.
Welcome back to The Everyday Actor. I'm your host, Emma Dayton Peterson, and this is episode 9. So I don't know about you guys, but one of the things that I didn't realize when I decided to become an actor was that creating your own content and being your own producer and director and just artistic mind behind a lot of projects is something that comes with the territory. Especially now in the 21st century, when we have access to so much technology, creating your own content is getting to be more and more important. So today we get to hear from Ian Mark and Blaze Hall, who are doing a fantastic job about creating their own things. During quarantine, they started working on their first feature film together. And today we get to hear all about their process and how they got to where they are and a little bit about what it takes to create this content. Today's episode is really important if you're looking to get your own foot in the door. You can't always rely on other people to hire you or to just magically find your talent. Sometimes you have to show them what you've got. Ian and Blaze are perfect examples of that. So take a listen. Well, I'm really excited to have you guys here. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us on.
I would love to just hear from each of you just a little bit about how you got started, where you are, what you do, and then we can go from there.
So I guess I had my first foray into the world of acting when I was 8 years old. My mom was really into community theater, and I just tagged along to an audition, and they just asked me, do you want to audition for this community theater play? So I did, and it was Brigadoon, the musical. And ever since that, I just literally couldn't get enough. It was the most alive I'd ever felt, being on stage in this imaginary world, and wept for weeks afterwards when the show closed, and I just knew, like, that was it. So pretty much ever since then, I've been pursuing it, and so many people told me to do something else in college. So I studied broadcast journalism, thinking like, okay, well, I'll be in front of a camera and I'll be storytelling. It'll just be real life stories. And, you know, I'll get to use my brain and write a lot and be a reporter. And as soon as college was over, I realized there was no way in hell that's what I wanted to do. I'd always known what I wanted to do. So I went to New York and just started the audition circuit and just, you know, trying to beat down all the doors. And didn't love New York. it's a lot. It's an awesome place, but it wasn't really a good fit for me. I'm really into nature. And so I moved to LA. Promptly had my daughter. And now I've just been going at it with her by my side. And now
that's awesome.
And for me, I was a jock growing up, played football and basketball, ignored everyone who told me I would be like good in theater and improv and stuff like that. And then took one too many hits to the head, and in college needed to find like a new passion because I could no longer play sports. Started an improv group because I was like, oh, I love just making stuff up on the fly. And then people started like asking me to be in like their student films. So for me, it was like I didn't even have to audition at first. I just got to show up and like people would mic me up and they'd be on camera and they'd be like, all right, like do this, like be funny now. And so I loved that and was like, oh, wow, acting seems like a really, really fun thing. And I was already like writing novels and I had my first novel published and I figured, well, not writing novels has a lot of downtime. So I need another like artistic pursuit that will keep me going while I'm emailing agents and publishers and whatnot. And so after I graduated, I moved out to LA and started pursuing acting and booked a good paying commercial in my first 2 weeks and was like, oh man, this is going to be so easy. And
Hashtag made it.
Yeah. Not many people have that story.
Yeah. Well, after that I discovered, I haven't booked a commercial paying that much since. So.
Right. It's very up and down.
And then I just kind of got into doing all the other aspects of production and writing. And I directed the short we made last year and enjoyed that. And so now I just kind of want to do all the artistic stuff and try as many different things as possible and do whatever I can to never get bored with everything that's out here and just this great big world we have to play in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It's been really fun over the years. I mean, I think when I went to college and sort of like gave up acting or whatever, obviously I did a lot of acting in college still and did all the student films and everything too. And then when I decided to pursue acting professionally, I had the impression that I really needed to focus on acting. And if I wanted to be really good at it and really make a career in it, I needed to focus on just acting and like pick one thing. I've been artistic my whole life, and my mom was a piano teacher, so I studied piano and was a classical performance pianist and was in choirs and singing groups my whole life. But
she's an amazing singer.
Thank you. I sort of gave all those things up and was like, I just need to hone in on one thing. I don't want to be average at 20 things. And it's been fun over the last few years realizing that like life is not a linear path. And if you are blessed to have many gifts, they do all work together and you can use all of them to kind of build each other up in some ways. So it's been really fun, like working with Ian over the last couple of years because I don't know, we've just had to do all the jobs ourselves on some of our productions and just like, okay, we're going to make something. So we have to be the writers and the producers and the directors and the artistic designers and like the set designers and everything. And realizing that like, okay, you can kind of learn how to do it all. And yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And I know you guys have used this quarantine time to really work on some new projects. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We're now working on a feature called A More Perfect Union that is about a family that is forced to quarantine apart when the husband, his trial for stealing papers from the NSA is interrupted by the bailiff getting COVID. So he's forced to quarantine away from his wife. His wife, meanwhile, is waiting to divorce him because she's fed up with him crusading against this all-powerful government entity and is also dealing with a guilty conscience of her own because she has recently discovered that their 2-year-old daughter is actually the product of a one-night stand she had when they were polyamorous before they settled down with
so you're not
a famous
the baby daddy.
Musician, yes. Henry Berg is not the baby daddy.
Yeah, so it's sort of a political and family drama. We wanted to really just touch a lot of relatable beats with this piece. So there is this sort of Edward Snowden guy who's like raging against the machine. And then we wanted to make Henry and Stella's relationship incorporate a lot of modern love. So they're not a traditional couple that, you know, met and fell in love and got married and had a baby. They kind of did everything in a different order. So there is the polyamorous piece, which is very personal to me because I am polyamorous. We're polyamorous.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was. I have been made polyamorous.
He loves it.
I do.
I love that. Good. That's great. You're learning new ways of life.
Yeah. But just that, you know, love in any concept is not a simple thing. And, you know, modern love is not either. Being polyamorous, it does have complications. You know, that can be really difficult for a family to navigate. So we wanted to kind of touch on all of that.
And we also know that like there is going to be this huge rush of COVID content and there's going to be no shortage of people trying to make like the one film that defines coronavirus. And we really wanted to stay away from just kind of like the paint by numbers, like, oh, this family is quarantining and they lose somebody to COVID and we see them cry and like, they can't go outside and they can't go to parties. Like, and we wanted to do something that was bigger and didn't just. America has more problems than just our coronavirus response. Like, we wanted to touch on some of the other things that maybe contributed to why this country, like, has failed to respond to this virus, like, far more than other countries, and didn't want it to just be like, well, COVID's bad.
Yeah.
Like, we wanted to have sort of a larger theme and message.
If we're going to put this much effort and, you know, personal time and money and everything into telling a story, we want it to be a story that maybe isn't necessarily going to get told by studios anytime soon. So incorporating the polyamory and my character is also non-binary. which I think is starting to become more prevalent in mainstream media, but still
Has a long way to go.
It's moving slowly. Henry's twin brother is gay. One of my partners from before we closed off the marriage and became exclusive is in a lesbian marriage. And I was in a relationship with her while I was in a relationship with Henry. So we're just kind of touching on like just the fluidity of
love
and life and sex and gender and hopefully opening people's eyes to that a little bit more.
I think that's really wonderful. I just really feel like as artists, we have a way to change the view of the world.
Absolutely. And we're trying to keep it a really honest version of the story. So it's not like, oh yeah, they're polyamorous and like, just look at, they just get to like fuck everyone and it's so awesome. Like it's, you know, it's like, no, like we have like really complicated relationships and it can lead to, yeah, a lot of difficult things you have to navigate, but it can be really positive and yeah.
And narratively, it just gives you so many more options. Like, I mean, we've all seen so many like love triangle films where it's basically like, oh, he's picking between two women or oh, she's picking between two men. And there's only like one way this ends with her picking one of them. Mm-hmm. And with polyamory, like that's not how it is. Like there's any endless numbers of ways that people could work out like difficult attachments between three people. And you know, this is a family that does have to account for the fact that like the biological father is not in the main relationship and he deserves to have a relationship with his daughter and he deserves to have a relationship with the mother of his child. And by nature of that, he's going to have some sort of relationship or friendship or whatever you want to call it with Henry Berg, the character I play. And it's far more complex. It's like it's harder to predict what's going to happen. And I think the more nuanced you make it, like the more realistic people will see it as and will stop seeing polyamory as just an excuse to have multiple sexual relationships, but really a way to have multiple like loving relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look who read Ethical Slut.
Well, I keep thinking too, as an actor, that it's so much more interesting to play characters with that depth rather than just the kind of cliche movies and romance films that you were talking about between the two people. What fascinating characters, because they do have depth and there is that complication.
Absolutely. And just the complication too of being a parent and wanting your kid to have stability, wanting to provide a certain lifestyle for your child, feeling societal pressures to provide a certain lifestyle and a certain image of family for your child, but also wanting to be true to yourself as an adult, to be true to yourself in love. It's something I've experienced, you know, in real life as a single mom. It's a whole new consideration dating as a single parent. So I think I'm bringing a lot of that to the character in terms of like what I want my child in real life to be privy to in my love life and just how much consideration there is for your child once you are a parent.
We're also super pumped that this film will be the big screen debut of
Kalinda Jade. My daughter's going to be in the film. She's been in a lot of my shorts, but this is her big feature debut.
I love that.
2 years old, already like makes jokes and like mugs for the camera.
She can fake cry.
Really?
She's doing so good. We literally, I like tell her and I like put little like water droplets on her eyes and I'm like, okay, now cry. And she goes,
That's awesome.
Such a Hollywood baby.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the film where there's like a little accident at home her character like gets cut and has to bleed. And so we need her to cry for that.
So that's why we've been practicing. Stella, not just because I think it's funny for her to cry. We actually are trying to teach her this.
Yeah. And Stella like goes running around and she doesn't know if she can bring her name's Haley in the film. She doesn't know if she can bring Haley to the ER because she's seeing all this stuff online about like the ER is being swamped. We set the film during like the first 2 weeks of the lockdown on March 15th in LA. So it's right in that time where like there was so much misinformation out there. People didn't know like what they could do, what they couldn't do, like what was safe. It was a really confusing time and one that I think when people reflect on this like decades from now, they'll be like, what was that like? And we kind of hope that our film is one of the things people watch and they're like, oh, damn, glad I did not have to live through that.
Right. I keep saying I'm actually really not excited, that's the wrong word, but I'm looking forward to being able to like tell my grandchildren about this. Like how like it's
assuming that the world is a lot better by then.
Well, that's really true. Excited. I know they're gonna be like, yeah, grandma, we're living through it too. Like,
really it never got better. Grandma, the pre-apocalypse sounds great.
I know, right? Oh God, I hope not. No. I have hope for the world.
Yeah.
Well, so since you are doing this through COVID, what have been some of the hardships that have come with creating a film during this?
Oh, everything.
I know. Like, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, we've very much been creating it in a vacuum, and it's that same concept I was talking about earlier where we're like, okay, we kind of have to be prepared to do everything. And I've sort of been gunning for, hoping for, praying for, pushing for us to still at least be able to have a skeleton crew. But Ian's been very audacious and autonomous in thinking that, like, even if we have to, like, we're going to power through and be able to, you know, shoot it ourselves.
Well, in order to, like, bring investors on, like, we needed to be able to say, like, we'll be able to shoot this even if the stay-at-home orders are – like re-implemented. So like the plan right now is to hire a skeleton crew of no more than probably 4 people at most. But like we're looking at potentially even having a DP like move in to live with me. And if not, like,
so he's Blaise like quarantining with us.
Blaise and I like have experience behind the camera, so if need be, like if we're start our shoot and we're 3 weeks in and all of a sudden Garcetti's like everybody's got to stop, she and I would be able to keep working on like the inserts that we have and the solo shots where only one of us is on camera. We're partnered with Blackmagic, so we're getting this Ursa Mini Pro G2 that we're like super excited to shoot on. And we're going to be shooting raw, which for the more technical people listening know that that gives us some more leeway in post-production. I would say the biggest issue from a real world like consequence is no film insurance is like being given out right now that covers COVID. So like you can get insurance for pretty cheap actually, but then if somebody gets COVID, you don't get any coverage. Workers' comp is also not covering COVID. And so that raises some challenges. And then like completion bonds or how most independent films like finish their financing, that's not really available to us. We are lucky because we found this great nonprofit Media Alliance. They were one of they're a press watchdog group. They're one of the groups that sued the NSA after the Snowden revelations. They've sponsored our film. So that means like people who donate to our project, like can write it off their taxes and get an immediate tax deduction. And that's made it easier to attract investors because even if they don't maybe believe that the film is going to be profitable or they think, okay, well, maybe you guys are going to get derailed by COVID, they still get the immediate financial benefit. And we also just, you know, we're big fans of Media Alliance, so it's really cool to be working with them and have them believe that, like, yes, this film could, like, really move forward the conversation on privacy in America and get people talking about, like, the increases in mass surveillance that have continued during this time.
Yeah. Almost every shot that is not Ian, myself, or my daughter can be shot through Zoom or simply voiceover as a phone call. It is my deep, deep desire and hope that we can get actual footage of the names that we have coming on for cameos, be able to send the DP and possibly Ian or myself to direct the shots, probably
who knows,
like. we might trade off on some of them or something, but be able to get actual footage and not just shoot through Zoom, because I think that will make the overall film just more entertaining to watch.
Yeah,
of course. But you know, if we're shooting everything in a timeline where it's, you know, we start with all the footage that we have to get of just Ian, and then all the footage of just me, and then the footage of all of us. And then hopefully by the time we get to all of our other characters, there's something in place where we can.
Yeah. Well, things are starting to move. So I'm hopeful for you guys. I am.
We are. We're hopeful as well. And there are so much more, as we learn more about COVID, there's so many more precautions that we can take. Learning more about COVID is going to make everyone feel more secure.
Yeah, so definitely.
Now that we know that masks really do work, that getting it from surfaces is highly unlikely, certain things like that that are making people feel more comfortable.
And we really wouldn't do this if we felt like we were risking anyone's like health or safety. Like, we're following all the protocols. And every time a union like unveils their 30 pages of guidelines, I'm always reading it and seeing like what they want us to be doing. And mm-hmm. and we've also tried to look at this. I don't know. This feels a bit wrong to say, but like, what are the advantages to making a film during a production shutdown? Mm-hmm. And so, like, we have George Weiner making a cameo. He was in our last short. Sarah Ann Massey, one of the Weinstein silence breakers, we wrote a part for her, and she's going to be in it, assuming schedules work out. And we're hoping to get bigger cameos as well. And we really feel like, you know, we're doing this charitable film, and all of these stars who normally are just constantly working and constantly on TV and whatever, and wouldn't be interested in a one day cameo, maybe now there is some appeal to us saying like, hey, we'll throw you all this money to do a two to four hours of work, like from your house. And all it's basically just a Zoom call for you. And for us, it'll make our movie like so much better and attract a much wider audience. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that, we've thought of as a way to like, we'd really like to get this film out to as many people as possible. Because I think it is important to have these conversations about like what America could have done, what we could still do in the future, regardless of who wins the election. And, you know, do we want to live in a country where we're constantly surveilled? I don't.
Yeah. It's also a really unique time and place in our personal lives together to be making a film like this, because I would say our relationship has become a lot more intimate in the last few months. Thank you, COVID. And so I think that us being able to direct each other is on really tough material is far more possible now. We've been working together now for almost 2 years. And I would say that just our understanding of each other as artists and what our triggers are and as human beings and just knowing each other so deeply is what's going to make the performances that we need to get out of each other really possible, which is cool to finally be in a place where we're gonna fucking do that.
Yeah, I love that. There's always a silver lining somewhere, even when the world is on fire.
Absolutely.
So, Ian, I know you were telling me that before you decided to make this feature, you were supposed to do your own feature that did get derailed by COVID.
Yeah.
I forgot about that movie. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like years ago.
It was written by this great guy named Gehan Kure. He cast me as the lead in a film called Fall Fever that was all about this like college graduate who ends up in a kind of Mrs. Robinson type affair with his like best friend's mother. Then there was a love triangle aspect where like an older man gets involved with the mother as well. And it kind of ruins his relationship with the friend. And we hit a few delays. And then ultimately we were supposed to get going like April, May, June of this year. And then as that got, I mean, obviously COVID came and like that pretty much scrambled it. And I think. Unfortunately, due to the timing of like the lead actress's age and whatnot with the role, the film might not end up ever happening. So obviously, like, as you know, an actor in Hollywood grinding it out to be about to have that kind of chance to really anchor a film, it was a big disappointment, obviously. But I think part of the reason Blaze and I like get along so well is like we both kind of have this mindset of like, if something you want gets taken from you, like don't just like wallow in it, like figure out how you can like still grow and keep becoming the artist like you're meant to be, and like find a project that really will challenge you. And honestly, like a more perfect union, I am even happier to have that be the first like feature I'll be a lead in, like mm-hmm. and so I would still love to do Fall Fever at some point, but we're making the best of this horrible year.
Yeah.
It's really nice to be in a position where we are kind of the shot callers, because so many films that I've been on just never get made. Like, you shoot it or you're in talks with it or whatever. I had a SAG contract for a new TV show back when I lived in New York, and then funding got pulled and it completely fell through.
Josh Taylor.
No, that was, God, what was it called? It was about like a marching band or something, but it literally just completely fell apart.
That's so disappointing.
And then, yeah, I shot a film in Norway 2 summers ago with my daughter. They flew out my little 6-month-old baby. They flew out my nanny. It was an amazing experience. Very rocky experience, but also amazing to be shooting in Norway with my baby there. And like,
yeah,
my nanny brought her to me on set so I could breastfeed and then put her back, gave her back, and then like went back on set. And I was like playing a high schooler, but I was like this breastfeeding mom. And it was just like, I don't know. It was just really cool to be. It was a really cool moment in my life. But yeah, long story short, they never made it.
Oh, no.
It's still in post. Every year, the deadline changes on IMDb. It's like, oh, now it's being released in 2019. Oh, now it's being released in 2020. And it's like, right, we'll see.
maybe during COVID, they've had lots of time to edit. And 2021 is the year. You never know.
I think it's a funding thing because half the cast has like a group chat where they vent about still not having gotten paid.
Oh, no.
Thankfully, I did get paid, which I think is partly sympathy due to me having a baby. They were like, we better pay the mom. She'll come after us.
Yeah, so any wannabe actors listening to this on how to break in, like when you're negotiating pay, like really, like pull out all the stops.
Just be like, I need money.
There is no card you should not play to get yourself paid before the other cast.
Well, while we're on that beat, should we talk about how we met?
Oh, yeah, that's true. So the project that I produced that led to us meeting where we cast Blaze to play my wife was never finished. I mean, we have a rough cut, but basically everybody involved kind of looked at it and didn't really want to put more money into it.
They posted a breakdown on Backstage and it's an unpaid project. And I was like, well, I never do unpaid stuff because like then how do I pay for the sitter? I should at least break even on my projects. But I was like, oh, it looks like a really cool story. It was sort of a trans twist on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Written by Quay Tan, who has now been on the murder show.
How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, and, okay.
You know, White People.
She's
phenomenally talented. Like, so young, already so good. Like, it's kind of stuff, like, you'd hate her if you weren't working with her. But because you're working with her, you're like, wow, you're amazing.
You should get her on this podcast.
Well,
you can.
If you guys can connect me, I would love that.
Oh, yeah. We'd be happy to.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
Anyways, we were casting a bunch of roles, including the wife of my character. And
so I just did the apply now, ask later kind of situation. So they cast me off my reel.
It's like, by the way, I have like a 10-month-old or 11-month-old kid. Like, will you be, and I'm a single mother, like, will you be able to provide like babysitting
after
they
cast me?
And I was like, oh, damn. I was like, well, in my head, I was like, I've never had anybody ask me this before. This was only probably like the third project I'd produced. And I was like, well, it'd probably be morally wrong of me to like cast somebody else now. And she is really the one I wanted for this like character. So let's see if we can like figure out a way to have it done. And we ended up saying, you know what, bring your kid to the rehearsal. We'll get somebody there for the actual shoot day. And then at the rehearsal, Callie actually took her first steps.
At the rehearsal.
Oh my gosh.
For the project
that we met on. That's adorable.
What a mushy story.
I love that so much.
Yeah, and she was holding one of Quay's like red stripper heels while she took her first step.
Oh, good.
It was amazing. Yeah, she was like, this is the shoe I want. I could just see it in her eyes.
Yeah,
that's so
funny. And then Blaze joined my improv group. And I was telling her about this other thing I had going with George Weiner. And she was like, oh, my God, that sounds amazing. Like, we have to write it. We have to do it. And that turned into He's That Guy, which we haven't released yet because it's still going through its festival run. But we got into the Washington Jewish Film Festival. We were supposed to be there in May COVID. I got some awards. We won Best Comedy at a few places. Like,
how exciting.
It's been going really well. This partnership is working out so
profitable.
Far. Profitable, yes. Let's put it in those terms.
So you were talking about your improv team / troupe.
Yes.
Is that that's Pasta Donuts?
The Pasta Donuts, yep.
Yes. Before COVID, we were live streaming a 15-minute show every week from my place. Well, it started in Pasadena, hence the name. But then as I moved to Hollywood and Studio City and back to Hollywood and back to Studio City. Like, the troupe kind of just followed wherever we went. We had started performing at local theaters, and I mean, improv is really what brought me to acting. Improv is, like, I still find just unbelievably fun. You walk out there with no idea what you're going to say. You just look at your scene partner and one of you, like, does something, and next thing you know, you're off and you're in 1930s France doing a bit in terrible accents. And it's kind of been the genesis of all this other stuff. Is people in the group were like, well, why don't we make sketches? Why don't we make more content? And it's one of the things I love about film is kind of the collaborative nature of it. Like, I don't know that I myself would have ever been so ambitious in what we've done with the group, but having all the talented people that I was just like, hey, you're fun. You should come to my house and make stuff up with me. And then they were like, oh, well, I'm doing this other awesome thing. Like, why don't we do this? And it just kind of builds and builds and builds. And next thing you know, you're LLCing yourself and you have a production company that you're trying to get off the ground and working with some of, like, your best friends in the world.
That's what's so great about this industry. You just never know. And you never know what you're going to end up falling in love with. That's what I've found. Like, I didn't know when I originally wanted to go into acting that I was also going to love the production side and the directing side. So that's just, it's just a wonderful aspect of it that's unexpected. Mm-hmm. But if someone, like a young actor, wanted to get involved in improv a little more, what would you suggest?
Honestly, I mean, there's so many good improv schools, but if you can find a group that you can do it for free, like, that's a great foray into it. There's a lot of different groups. There's a group here in LA called Rogue Improv. Well, I mean, obviously none of them are meeting right now, but Rogue is free and you can show up at any week. You just join the Facebook group and find out, like, where they're meeting and stuff. And they do a lesson, and then I think once a month they do a show. So they do a class and a show. It's really fun. It's a really good group. I mean, definitely like UCB or...
If you have money to drop on joining one of the culty improv groups like UCB or Groundlings or one of the other ones, like, you should Second know City. That they're going to try and keep you there for 6 to 8 years of $400 to $600 a class. But they do good work and they do teach you good stuff. We've both taken classes with some of those. I would say for those of you who don't have the money to drop on that beforehand, like, maybe look around locally and see if there is a community of improv, kind of like Rogue that Blaze mentioned, where, like, you can improvise for free. And then also I would say, like, improv really is just like what you do in life. And it's just basically two key rules of, like, be open to things, like, say yes and, like, try not to negate the people around you. And then listening. It's just always working on listening. Like, no matter how many years I do this, I always, like, before I have a big call or a big, like, scene or whatever, I always just remind myself, like, breathe and listen to the person across from you. Yeah. And everything else is just being a human. Yeah. Like, the most natural reactions, the funniest things you do are always going to be when you're engaged to your scene partner and listening to them. And that's something that you can work on in a class, outside of class. Like, you can have one person that you're currently seeing in quarantine and have only them be the one that you're working with. And if they're down to play, you can play a lot of games and just get better and better and better.
We did two prov for weeks on our channel until I got bored of it and was like, so if quarantine's going to last for like a year, I'm not doing this anymore. Let's make a feature instead.
I would have been down to still be doing the two prov. But yeah, no, we're going to make a feature and that's awesome too. And
but I do think a lot of actors forget that improv is the basis of acting as soon as they get a script in their hand. And they're like, oh, I have to, like, read the script, see what's on there, and then deliver that emotion. It's like, nope, you have to exist in a space with your partner. And you have to say those lines. And of course, there are, like, a handful of right ways to do it, but the only right ways are the ones that are real for you.
Yeah, I think we tend to get stuck in our training sometimes. Like, I have my BFA in acting, and well, I'm really glad I have my BFA and have that training, but sometimes I have to remind myself just to be a human. Like, don't focus on it too much. And when I'm lost, I go back to the training. When I'm stuck, but just gotta listen and be a human.
I did a lot of training in college too, and a couple different conservatories in New York. And then when I got out here, I found myself at AMAW. I would say that they kind of have like a marriage between improv and scene study. So their scene study is really focused on improv. So you don't ever really get off book because the goal is to just like hold the script and not be worried about like, oh, do I have the lines? Do I have this? Like, it's just like live really in the moment. And they will have you start doing random things. They're like, okay, now do the scene as if like you have ants crawling up your body the whole time or something. And then just to get you out of your own way and get you out of your own head, even if it doesn't make any sense for the scene, sometimes they'll just like add crazy things on top of it just
That's
to help
cool.
you. Yeah. And it's amazing what it can crack open. Yeah. It's a really cool spot to train. I really enjoyed training there. I was actually in teacher training until Corona derailed everything. So
I like how half of our stories are like, we were doing this. And then COVID happened. And now we're
That's all of my stories too. And like the past like 3 months, everybody's like, oh, what are you up to? I'm like, well, COVID's happening. So I'm trying a bunch of things. But
it's awesome that you still have this podcast though, because you can do it remotely.
Yeah. And I was planning on doing the podcast before COVID. And I was going to put it on hold once COVID hit. And then but I didn't want to. And it is keeping me sane during all of this. So I did So I'm really glad that I didn't realize that this technology was even available or that it would be good enough quality. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really glad to live in this time that I do have this.
Absolutely.
I'm just impressed you like run it all yourself. Like I just got hired to host this podcast called Double Stone Studies, where I get stoned with like a different scientist every week.
That's amazing.
like the network that runs it, Viewer, like they do all the technical stuff. Like I just open up my computer and like click on the little link and they gave me this microphone. And so if I had to interview people like and like manage all the technical side, like I would get completely lost. So kudos to you for
Well, thank you. It's a lot more work than I thought, but I love the work. Like I actually really love sitting for 2-3 hours and editing. So it's been like a blessing for me.
It's been really cool. I mean, I would say like the first 3 months of COVID was hell because I didn't really have childcare. And so lot of things came to a screeching halt for me, like time management, mothering my child and trying to still be an artist and survive as a human was like really, really hard. Some dark days. But now that I have daycare again, it's been amazing. Like the art is just flowing out of me, man. Like crazy. It's been so cool.
It's been cool to see like what everybody's putting together and how everybody's dealing with it through the art.
I feel like this is the artistic dream. Like, can I please just live on unemployment and make art for the rest of my life?
I know. I just wish I could see people while I do it.
Propaganda.
Okay. Well, if you guys could give, you know, just to kind of wrap things up, if you guys could give any advice to a new actor, like advice you wish you had gotten when you were first starting.
I'm going to go two ways with this. The advice that I did get at first that I think is good to hear, but also good to ignore to a certain degree. I was told if you can be happy and do anything else, do that, because it is so fucking hard. And it's, you know, it's a grind and it's a lot of just luck of the dice or luck of the cards or whatever you want to call it to actually make a career out of this. So if you are wanting stability, if you are wanting a career where like you can create some kind of financial solvency for yourself and you think you can be happy doing something else, like, yeah, that is not bad advice to hear. You know, so for me, like originally when I went to college, I really took that to heart and like convinced myself that I would be happy as a reporter. So on the one hand, I'd say it's good advice because like if you're like going into college or going into whenever you're really like, what am I going to be when I grow up? And there's like a handful of things that you're like, oh, I could be happy like, you know, being a lawyer and making tons of money, or I could be happy doing this or whatever, like probably pick the other thing. And then you can always incorporate your art in your life. If you have a call for art, like absolutely never deny it. But if you know, like I knew since I was 8 years old, and deep down you just fucking know, like don't let anyone convince you otherwise, because you will just look back on that time and like just think of it as wasted. Like I wish I'd studied acting in college. I wish that I had never let anyone dissuade me for one second. And then the other advice on the other flip side of that is wherever you are at in your life, if you have that call, that little voice inside you, and you know that that's what you want, it's never too late. There is nothing that can get in your way. If you decide that that's what you're going to fucking do, then you're going to do it. Can I swear on this podcast? Because I just
yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. Totally. Totally fine.
I was like, wait, is this for children? What age of actors are we motivating here? If you're 12, then do it. If you're 18, then fucking do it. But yeah, like just do it, because there is always a way to carve out your place and there is always a way to grow your inner artist. I am not the artist I was 5 years ago. So just never stop growing, never stop challenging yourself, never stop taking on new material, new roles. Like for me, growing as a writer has been huge. And then other things, even like, okay, I'm going to be an actor. That means I have to like give up singing, give up songwriting or whatever. Like don't get stuck in those traps either, because I just wrote a song that's going to be featured in our film. And you know, it's like, just be all of it. Just be all of it. Just do all of it. Just don't get in your own way, because the only person who can get in your way is you, ultimately.
That's awesome. Love that.
Is that an answer?
Okay. I have two, I guess. One kind of along those lines, like if you're somebody who can't handle being told no, or if like people, if you find rejection as like a reflection of your own self-worth, this is not the business for you. Like, you'll often hear people say an actor's job is auditioning. Like, you're going to go out for so many projects and get really close to some really, really exciting things that you just can't imagine, like, how cool it would possibly be to get to do it. And then sometimes even when you get cast, like we were talking about my film earlier, like, even when you have all these people lining up ready to bet, like, $1 million on your ability to carry a movie, the real world gets in the way and it gets pulled away. But if you hear no and you can't handle it, don't come into this. But if you're someone who, like, hears no and thinks like, all right, well, like, you missed out on a chance to work with me. Like, you have the ego, I think, you need to be out here.
A healthy amount of ego, yeah.
Audacity.
And then as far as, like, just getting better as an actor and continuing to improve, like, this is the advice I give when people ask me about becoming an author, too. Like, humans are basically just super complex, like, input-output machines. Like, your output is going to be defined by what you're putting into, your brain. Like, if you want to be a great actor, you need to watch a lot of TV. You need to watch a lot of film. You need to watch the really great actors. You need to know, like, what has already been done. You need to know where the zeitgeist stands. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, like, the art that we are creating, like, exists in this time that we're living in. And it's in conversation with all the art that comes before it. Like, the more you know about classic film, the more you're going to see all the homages just in shots and lines and that are in all the new films that are going to become like what are considered classics as we go on. So,
and watch it with a critical eye. Don't just like, oh, I'm going to just click on Netflix and skim through. Watch it critically. Watch it and read the script, because that's where like a lot of the learning comes from for me at least, because I'll watch it and be like, okay, yeah, that was great. And then I read the script and I'm like, how did they get from that to that? Okay, let's dissect that. And that's where you really start to figure it out.
There's so many variables in a film production. Like, I've been watching TV, obviously, for a really long time and watching it with a critical eye for a long time. Recently, like, getting ready for Perfect Union, I've realized, like, I don't know nearly enough about lighting. So now when I watch films, I'm like, all right, where's the key light? Like, where's the backlight? Like, what are they doing here? Is it 3-point? Is it 2-point? Like, what are they doing here? How does it relate to the mood? Like, what are they doing? And there's just, like, there's an endless number of ways you can analyze, like, a film and a TV show. And you need to be thinking along those lines if you want to be, like, not just a good actor, but the best version of yourself as an actor you can be.
Absolutely. And one more thing that came to me. I was talking to my therapist last week. Quick mental health plug. Go to therapy. Actually,
yes, I agree.
Actually, low-key, though, like, as an artist, go to fucking therapy. I'm going to diverge for just a second. I used to think as an artist, like, I have all this trauma from my childhood and all this stuff that I've been working through now as an adult. And I used to think, like, okay, well, I don't want to, like, totally heal from it, though, because, like, those are all my triggers. And so when I need to do, like, really tough scenes, I just want to have all this pain inside me that I can just, like, poke and then just, like, rah.
I've had the same thought. I'm so glad you said that. It's so relatable. And it's not – It's not true.
It's not true. Heal, heal. You deserve it. And then the more you heal and the more you're okay with that shit from the past, like the more you'll be able to use it safely without hurting yourself worse. Yeah. So that's like a side, complete aside. But anyways, back to when I was in therapy, my therapist brought up one of her other clients who's also an actor and a little bit older than us. And she said that he was just telling her how he's come to a point in his life where he finally feels a balance between like being an artist and having it be this thing that is his life and is his passion and is his life's work, but also being a person and having a balance and having a family, having people that he loves and cares about and makes time for, having hobbies that aren't acting and that aren't like, you know, and they might be other artistic hobbies or whatever, but they don't have to be with a career goal behind them. Having things that he does just for himself, just for fun, like just going surfing, just going rollerblading, having things that he's learning about, reading books about things that have nothing to do with acting. Yeah, sleeping enough. Like, don't let it become this thing that just consumes you, because this is a fucking marathon, not a sprint. And so if you're going to last and be one of the ones who builds a sustainable career out of this, you've got to take care of yourself, because no one else is out here unless you meet someone who is, and then you're really fucking lucky.
That's good. I needed to hear that today. Yeah. I've been sprinting for like the past like few days. Like, okay. It really is. You got to pace yourself. There's a lot to do.
That's been a theme for my past couple interviews of everybody just feeling a little like they've been sprinting, like they're not breathing and not finding that balance. So I love that you said that too, because it's just been the theme of the week.
Yeah. I think COVID is really, I mean, a lot of people call it the great pause, but I think it has brought a lot of that to light for a lot of us who have been running around like chickens with our heads cut off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay to breathe. It's okay to sleep. It's okay to rest.
Yeah. Yeah. And your art will benefit from it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, I'm really excited for A More Perfect Union, and I can't wait to hear more about it and follow its journey.
I also should say, if anyone has listened to this and would just love to contribute, I don't know where the budget will be in 2 weeks, but we will probably still be taking stuff, even if it's just for posts. So you can send an email to pasadonuts@gmail.com. That's pasadonuts@gmail.com. And we'll give you more info there.
Perfect. And I'll make sure to put that in the show notes too. Is there anywhere else you guys would like to direct listeners to find you guys?
They can follow our Instagram that the Blaze is running at A More Perfect Union Film. Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you so much. Ian and Blaze, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I just think you guys are so awesome, and I can't wait to see what happens with A More Perfect Union. For anybody who wants to keep up with the film, you can follow them on Instagram at A More Perfect Union Film. And as always, please give the podcast a follow on Instagram. The Instagram is Everyday Actor Pod. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, just want to say hi, you can always send a DM or a message on Instagram, or even send me an email at everydayactorpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Our theme music was brought to you by the lovely Alyssa. To hear more of her music, you can check out her Spotify, which I have linked in the show notes below.